LT, how you doing? What's what
well.
Is up? I'm sure you're watching intently on the battle of the NFC least this weekend.
Well, I feel as though at least the Eagles have all their coaches, lined up in a row. How are the Giants doing?
Well, can I just, we made a bet last week, and I was looking forward to a really nice tweet about me after the Giants tore the Eagles apart, and I thought it was a pretty disingenuous tweet. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm not going to make it personal, but I just didn't think it was really a really nice thing you said about me. What'd you say again? You remind me of a guy from Hee Haw or something like that?
No, I think I said that you were a really good slow dancer, is what I said. And then I complimented you for once upon a time having a haircut similar to Conway Twitty, which anybody knows that's a high compliment.
Maybe for your generation, low tide.
Now, LT, I know that you're up on a lot of different. You love looking at draft picks and prospects and everything. And well, Byron Bader, who is the creator of Hockey Prospecting, he's an NHL draft consultant, data scientist. So he has a model for D-men spanning over 40 years, and talks about, where they're going to play based on where they're playing now and kind of projecting the future. And he has Evan Bouchard ranked in the model, and there's only 8 defensemen who have looked as good as Bouchard at this time based on Bader's model. Now, Ray Bourque, obviously legit. Berard, Hedman, stupid good. Ellis, Murphy, D'Angelo, Darlene, and then, of course, John Slaney is maybe a little bit of the outliner there. So, you look at that, you've got a Hall of Fame guy in Bourque, a future Hall of Famer in Edmund. Ryan Ellis is a really good player. Berard was pretty good until the unfortunate eye injury. D'Angelo had a pretty breakout year this year. Darlene's good. Murphy, and then, of course, John Slaney was an okay player. So where do you see this? How much stock, if any, do you put into this when it comes to Evan Bouchard?
Well, I do like comparables, and I think that they are valuable. But I think that list is extremely positive for Bouchard. There's a lot of really good players there. But again, there's Slaney, and there's at the low end, there's a wide range. We'll put it that way. I think Bouchard is going to play a long time. I think he's extremely talented. This is what I don't know. I don't know for sure that Evan Bouchard is going to be a top, pairing, even strength. I know he'll play a lot on the power play, but I don't know if he's going to be an even strength, player who gets a lot of ice time like Larry Murphy did, who was a somewhat similar as a junior and then into pro. Bouchard has some things they want him to work on defensively, and I think a lot of it has to do with pace and urgency and being able to make plays when under pressure. All young defensemen have that problem. That's the only area that I see being an issue. I think he'll play top 6. I don't know if he'll play top 4, and I don't know if he'll be a top pairing guy. I think you can say right now Evan Bouchard is going to put up some pretty impressive offensive seasons. I don't know if it's in Edmonton because they brought in Tyson Berry, who sort of duplicates his job. Is Berry here for a year or is he here for longer? But if I'm an Oilers fan, I feel very good about the Bouchard draft pick. I think he's going to be a really good hockey player.
It's interesting because, I get it. Like, these guys, they crunch the numbers, and I got to respect it a lot. But for me personally, until I see him actually play and kind of evolve or not evolve in the NHL, it's kind of hard. I have a hard time judging. Like, I see him make those nice passes, and I watch his highlights with Sordatelli, and we saw the goal where he walked around the whole offensive zone. Pretty shoddy defending, but he still had to make that play, and he made it individually, right? So he obviously has his head up. I love that he's got some ability to move and make plays, but until we see him making those plays at the fastest level and then defending at the fastest level, I have a hard time ranging him. Like, I think in the third pairing, no problem. But can he get up higher and then really be a guy you can count on in all aspects of the game? Until I see him play against NHL players, low tide, I think it's kind of hard. And I know that's not much of a model, but that's what I've got. Do you feel differently, or do you see a new way to, or a different way of evaluating the guy before seeing him play?
Well, I think offensively we can say he's going to be a contributor. But okay. Defensively, You know, I'll use an example of somebody that you and I have talked about before. I will tell you honestly that I thought Theo Pekham was going to be a really good player in the National. Not a top pairing guy, but a guy who could, was a rugged player. He wasn't brilliant with the puck, but he could move it up. He was physical. I think his first year was pretty darn good. I think he played with Tom Gilbert, and then he played with you for a while in year two. And then he got hit in the face with a puck, and I never felt he was the same after. After that, you never know with defensemen, number one, because of injury, and number two, because it's a really tough position to play. And if you, like, Bouchard's not a burner, so he's got to play really well positionally. He can't get burned to the outside, and that means he's got to cheat a little bit that way. But what is he cheating on? And I don't know. You're right. You've got to see it a long time. You've got to see him a couple of years in the National Hockey League. But defensemen can fool you, and part of it is injury.
Well, I think Stretti can attest to this. You know, maybe that puck in the face hurt Theo Pekham, but probably his lack of commitment to staying in shape, Stretti, how much of that was a factor?
Oh, yeah. No, that was a big one. And I think he recognizes that now. And, you know, so that's the problem sometimes. I think that we look at these players and we try to evaluate. And you know, we can see what they do on the ice, but we don't see what they do away from the rink as far as lifestyle, as far as committing to the game. Like we heard Ethan Bear, he's been on the show and he's talked about how he changed his lifestyle dramatically. Like not just as far as the way he eats, he and his girlfriend started eating differently. You know, the working out, all that stuff. And it does make a difference. You know, it really does make a difference. And one of the things I've challenged, you know, or like to see Ethan Bear and Caleb Jones and well, Barry does it anyways, is to get enough condition in your game so you can get up and down the ice and support the rush. To do that, you got to be really in good shape. And you got to be a good skater, you know, because you got to be able to get up there quick. But when you see Hedman make a pass to the winger out of his own corner and jump past the forechecker, and in many times, if not leading, he's right up there on the rush, like the conditioning you got to have for that low tide is absolutely huge.
Yeah.
And if players don't do that, you know, it's not that they can't do it because they don't have the skill. They don't have the capacity physically to handle that type of thing.
Yeah, and Bouchard's a funny guy because he doesn't ever look panicked, and that's good in a way, but it also can if he's not making a good play, it contribute to maybe, you know, does he even care about this? And I think there is something to that. Bouchard looks calm all the time, even when mistakes are made. And I, you know, you mentioned foot speed. There's... I don't know how much better you can get at it if you don't have foot speed. You can work on it, and as you say, you can improve your conditioning. But there's a play that cost Mark Fain his NHL job, and that was, you know, when you stay up at the blue line and you force the forward to shoot the puck into the corner. Fain would do that, but he was not able to beat the forward back to the puck at the end boards, and that became a real problem for him, and when they brought in Chris Russell, he was able to do that. And I think that's something NHL coaches are very aware of. And Bouchard, as an NHL player, that's going to be one of the things I think he'll have to work on. That just that very simple play, getting back, getting the puck under control, send it to your partner, and scoot out. I think that if, you know, until he proves he can do it, he'll get picked on a little bit.
Al Mitchell joins us on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Al, we inch closer. I talked to a few NHL players today and management types, and you know, it seems that, you know, like the January 1st, and I've said this a long time, I never thought January 1st was ever going to work. And, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, maybe more likely, because if you come to Edmonton, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And you want training camp to maybe be 10 to 12 days. Well, you're going to have to get players in by December 4th or 5th for sure. So I just, you know, I guess that's possible the next 2 weeks, but you know, I think we're going to see more mid-January start. What do you guys think?
I think that's right. There's also the matter of them figuring out the money. Sarah Volley was on the Lowdown yesterday, and he said, you know, the way it looks now, the model looks, if the players get paid full bore for year one, the ratio won't be 50-50. It could be as high as 80-20 for the players. So, I mean, that may be how they go through year one, but that'll mean an enormous clawback and escrow for the players in years two two through whatever it is, six or seven now. So I think they're going to try to massage that a little bit. This might give them a little bit extra time. I'm okay with a 50-game season or a 60-game season. I'd rather everybody start safely. It sounds like we're getting better testing here. Maybe if you start on a 60-game season and you're using as a goal by game 35 or 40, being able to put at least some fans in the stands, that will help the revenue situation. I'm not absolutely focused on one particular date. What you want to see is progress, and up until this week, when it went a little bit awry with the money, as it always does, then that sort of, you know, took the wind out of the NHL sails. I think they'll start. I don't think it'll be January 1st. As you say, mid-January is, you know, more like, it would be nice to start on the 1st, New Year's and all that, but mid-January is just fine.
Well, what I hear you saying is something I kind of felt just about the restart for the playoffs, is that just get it in the books. Like, just get it done. And I don't remember who said it, but like, basically it's just to kind of keep you relevant. Keep, when I say you, the NHL, keep it in the news cycle, right? And then you hope you can start October 1st the next year full of fans or, you know, fully loaded. And then you try to rebuild what you've lost.
Amen to that. That's like I was very impressed. The NHL did, no matter what happens now, the NHL did a splendid job in the bubble. And Edmonton and Toronto should be commended, and everybody involved in the National. I know it was a lot of work. I know it was a lot of money. But they did it, and they did it right. Now they have to find a new model. And if they have to take an extra couple of weeks, to me, that's the least of the issue. Because, you know, once you start, then you're burning daylight. But right now, everything is sort of, you know, laying dormant, and you can think out your next move and think out the year as it rolls forward. And I think all of those things are good. Honestly, Bettman's handled this pretty damn well up to now, I believe.
What about the CFL, Al? What do you make of number one of the new schedule, where there's only take away two games from the East and you add it to two extra games in the West? Do you think this is a one-off, or do you think we're going to see this regularly moving forward?
Well, it's a great question, and I think, you know, obviously the Western cities would like to see, like, this isn't breaking news that Saskatchewan coming, you know, playing them more often is a good thing for, you know, revenue and for bums in the seats and all, if they can make it and all that stuff, and really for ratings. The only concern I would have is to make it equitable. I understand Edmonton is playing Hamilton twice, and my perception of the Tiger Cats is they'll be one of the better teams out there. So as long as everybody else is playing a good team as often as Edmonton would be, then I think it's fine. I like to see the new Ottawa team. To me, that's a fun thing. They're still new enough that it's a little unusual to see them. There have been times where Montreal would be so bad over the years, or Toronto or whatever. Seeing them here is not that big a deal, but I like to see Ottawa, and I've always liked to watch Hamilton, because I think Hamilton is a football city and a football town and a rabid fan base. They're basically like a Western Division team.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. What I there aren't many teams in the CFL, so if you start missing out on seeing some of them, I mean, I don't know how many times you want to see the same teams play.
Well, you're playing three times against your division team, Struts. Like, it's not a major. You're playing Calgary three times, Saskatchewan three times, BC and Winnipeg three times, and now you don't get to see Ottawa and Montreal. You get to see them on TV. Every game's televised, so you see them once this year, and then next year you'll see them twice, and probably Toronto and Hamilton once. Like, I think if you pull the majority of CFL fans, they'd much rather watch an extra game or two against Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, BC, and because there's more rivalries there, and there's usually more competitive games than playing the two East teams. Right. The only thing I don't like about this is that it puts you farther away from just having one division. I would just have one division when they had everybody play each other twice.
Amen.
And have the two extra games, because it's a farce. You have teams in the playoffs year after year with crap records even sometimes the second team in the East. It's a joke. It's an easy fix.
I agree with that. Just put them all in one, premiership, one table. Just go up and down, because and I think that would be better for the competitiveness. Because let's be honest here, you can play you can be a pretty poor team in the East for much of the year, improve late, make the playoffs, and make a run. And teams have done that many times over the years. You know, it should be the regular season should count. And if you put them 1 through 9, it will.
So if you do that, though, won't you perhaps see less rivalries in the playoffs? Like as far as West versus West teams early?
No, because you go 1 versus 6, Stretty. And so, you know, if in the first round that meant that an East team was playing a West team, oh well, but it would guarantee you that the better teams had the higher rankings, and then they had a better chance of facing each other off in the playoffs. Like some years you'd have 5 West and 1 East team. So, you know what, you're okay. Still going to have a West on West. And right now you're having West on West, but an East versus West anyway. So it's not really adding any less rivalry games. Basically, Struts, to put it in perspective for you, the CFL East is what the NFC least is right now, and it's been that way for years.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We're a rising tide. Let's review this conversation in a year's time when Joe Judge has his way.
Now, will Colombo have beaten up all of your coaches by then, or what is that?
Listen, he's a pretty big man. I don't think I would have picked a fight with that guy.
I don't know. Has anybody found out the word he used? Because that was a big mystery. Everybody goes, it's a bad word he used.
Like, yeah, I know. I'm curious what that word is.
Well, I think I know what it is, but we can't say it. But I'd like to, somebody could, you know, I don't know, give us a letter.
Well, you got to think about, like, behind closed doors, things that people say now, outside of, you know, racist remarks and things that shouldn't be said, there are words that are used that you'll hear them all the time inside of a dressing room. So, like, how bad can it be? Like, I've got a few words in my head that are pretty bad, but I don't know if it's that bad that your feelings are getting that hurt over it.
Well, hockey players only use one word, and they use it as a noun, a verb, an adjective, you know, pronoun.
Yeah, we could have a guess on what the word is, because I've really been racking my brain on one word that's just so bad, and I'm like, and I agree with Struds, you know, obviously anything racist, I could think of a pretty obvious one there, but I don't think you'd call Judge that word because last I checked, Joe Judge is Caucasian. So I'm not going to use that word. So I don't, I'm kind of, I have a few, but I'm not sure which one it is. I don't know how we could probably have that vote, but you'd have to use words that rhyme with. Like a Seinfeld episode.
I'm not going anywhere.
Just have a Seinfeld episode. All of a sudden, he's yelling out the window, Dolores! Still. Because trust me, everybody, when you watch that episode the first time, you were in your head, you're watching it, and you're saying names. And when George is like, Mulva? Oh, my goodness. Dying.
That was a classic episode. That was and then
so
it's Dolores,
good.
And you're like, of course. You know, anyway.
Yeah, so good.
Anyway, awesome. Stretty's team is very entertaining. The most entertaining team in New York City.
Well, it's not saying a lot. The Mighty Jets have got a long ways to go.
Oh, man. But I will say this, boys, that it was great to see the sunshine today. That CFL schedule, you know, I know it's a long way off, but you know, thinking about June and thinking about football, for me anyway, that was in a week that it's been kind of long and gray, it was nice to see the sunshine in the CFL schedule. So, to end a week like that, I'm okay with it.
LT, have a great night, weekend. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, mate. Be good, boys. Thanks.